There's no better time to be a human in the sea of AI-generated content. Your relationships are such a critical element that AI cannot replace. And we've seen that time and again in the kind of things that we go ahead and do within the work that we do, where PMMs are, you know, using AI for fixing generic outputs and like really getting into what the prompt needs to be to get me the right output for the information that I'm putting in. But AI really is powerful, but it's not magic. It cannot replace your judgment, your ability to weigh trade-offs, or your understanding of users. So you need to exercise where you need to audit the use of AI and ask it to stop so that you can come in and bring in your judgment into this.
Hello, and welcome back to Product Marketing Life. I'm your host, Sid Kaitan, a Senior Product Marketing Manager at Beekeeper by Lumapps. Today, I'm joined by Mayathri Shaith. Mayathri, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Sid. So happy to be here. Always been a fan of all the PMA podcasts and excited to finally make it to one.
Yes. And I forgot to introduce you. Mayathri was an early marketing hire at Gong, on the product marketing team, but I feel like I can't do it justice. Love for you to introduce yourself as well.
Yeah, thank you. And you got it right. I feel like just a little background about myself. I've been in product marketing for over 6 years now, but always been a marketing girl. I started out in fashion and lifestyle marketing, very B2C focused. So I was launching brands like Gap, Estée Lauder, making their first impact in APAC. And my world back then was very different because it's B2C. But as I watched from the outside, I could see how B2B felt very dry and lifeless. Like all of the messaging that you see out there for products and technology was just so dry. And I think, you know, that curiosity sort of led me to get into B2B just because I wanted to come in and change that and bring more clarity, color, sort of personality into how we talk about technology. So yeah, that I got my master's in market data research, where I dove into user insights, learning about behavioral data, and that's really how I stumbled into product marketing. Right after my education, I was at an education tech startup and as their first product marketing hire. So I was really responsible for user needs, behaviors, implementing go-to-market tactics. And right after that, as you said, I was an early marketing hire at Gong. I was at Gong for almost 4 years. So really seeing the company scale to the 300 million plus ARR where it is at now, really seen it go through the whole hypergrowth phase. At Gong, I led the AI narrative for the platform team. So really a full stack PMM responsible for influencing the product roadmap, bringing all of the Gong AI and AI agents features to life. So yeah, didn't really take the front door into product marketing, but stitched together everything that I knew from B2C to like make it here in B2B tech SaaS.
I love that. Yeah, that front door. I mean, it's like, to me, it just reminds me of those like Monsters, Inc. front doors where you know, in the movie, you open it, it just takes you somewhere new. So yeah, with
Yeah.
product marketing, it's very much a whatever, tumultuous journey.
Yeah.
Very cool. So earlier you mentioned curiosity, and I want to just I love to ask, you know, the person behind the product marketer, what is a non-marketing skill that's made you better at your job?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question. And I feel like, you know, I'd say two things that have really helped. One of them is just being a sort of a type A person in my non-professional life. I'm organized to a point where it's annoying to my husband, the kind of person who has like Excel sheets for a vacation or meal prep sheets on their fridge. And I feel like that quality sort of trickles into my work too, which sort of helps keeping all the stakeholders organized, making sure we are keeping launches on track and things like that. So I feel like that's really made me good at my job. And second, which is very recent, is like motherhood. I have a toddler who's 15 months old. And I feel like that's just like made me context switch so much because at 1 minute you're like thinking about your kid and you're negotiating with them over like bedtime and things like that. And the next minute you're like working on messaging or AI roadmap. And I feel like both of it requires so much patience and empathy, which is sort of like a non-negotiable in this job. So I feel like that muscle has sort of made me really calm in like high-stake environment, which is very helpful.
I love the first one still has me laughing because, yeah, it's so true. I think most product marketers I meet are in some level of type A, and like it's weird how it manifests. Like I'm a spreadsheet guy myself. Like literally my wife is always like, why do you have a spreadsheet for our next honeymoon or like for our next trip? So I very much relate to that. And the funny thing to me is like, I always still feel like I'm not organized enough. Like it's never enough. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe all the AI tools will help making us better in that space.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But those are great. I think they're new as well. I've not heard that from any of our guests. So thank you for being honest. All right, let's get into the meat of things. So first off, you were talking about in your product marketing journey, you kind of came out of this master's program and I believe joined an ed tech company. This was during like peak COVID, right? So like, and of course, product marketing is still, I would say still a nascent, like not well understood function. So what was that like? You know, how did you, how were you able to identify this role and how did you like kind of become a good fit for it as well?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, when I was getting my master's, I was very focused on like being a very data-driven person, like being able to lead more with data to build product stories rather than coming into conversations with like gut checks or like assumptions that you're working on. And I feel like because I was the first product marketing hire in the education tech startup, and it was like in a very nascent stage where we was just like launching on Product Hunt and you're working on getting those early users on your app to like track adoption and things like that, I feel like that muscle of like bringing that data into practice sort of helped a lot. I was the only product marketer on the team. I was working with, I think, six PMs who were sitting out of Tel Aviv. It was a Tel Aviv-based startup. So it was really about being able to get more process into place, but also be really close to the voice of the customer. Really, I feel like the biggest gap was that product managers were treating me, the product marketer, as more of like a conveyor belt situation where you're just shipping off products to the product marketer to like, hey, now take this out of market and bring it to customers. But I feel like it was important to bring in a sort of process as to like, no, you know, I need to be like elbowing my way into like, I should be a part of alphas. I should be a part of betas. I need that feedback to help me frame messaging and positioning. And I feel like that genuinely helped me a lot, even in my role at Gong, just because I feel like I could like take all of the skills I had learned in my past, even at B2C, to like really implement them when I was working at Gong. Because I was there for over 3.5 years, my role sort of shifted from working on industries to like release marketing. What does that process look like? To very recently more of leading the AI narrative within Gong, which was everything to do with the AI features, the AI agents that they recently launched. So really being able to bring in that data-driven mindset and how does that really translate into how we talk about features, how we really focus on the outcome that the features bring for customers. How is it that you focus on not the whole AI-powered bit of things, but the value that the features bring to customers? I feel like that sort of storytelling helped bringing all of that to life.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. And I am very much curious on that selfishly because I have to do similar exercise. But I am curious, yeah, like how did you go about shaping the AI narrative, you know, taking the company from feature to value and benefit? Like I think kind of two-pronged question is one, how did you get other internal teams to buy into that? Because I often find that's not always easy, getting engineering teams and product people to like have that mindset shift of, hey, we really do need to talk about this differently when it comes to our customers. And then, yeah, well, it was just like kind of the internal workings of that time, you know, like how did you go and communicate that externally as well with what we see with Gong today?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like the challenge at Gong was unique in the sense that Gong is an AI native platform. It is a multi-product platform too. There's Gong Engage, Gong Forecast, Gong Enable now, and AI wasn't really bolted on to the features. It was more of like embedded into these pillars that we have, product pillars. So my role really was to make that story more coherent and make that narrative flow seamlessly across the different product pillars. So it wasn't just like introducing a handful of shiny features. It was like being able to build one system that ran through the entire revenue process. So for example, take the AI agents launch, like the, all of the AI agents, they weren't just doing the basic things of like note-taking or call recording. We had built over a dozen specialized agents that were designed specifically for revenue teams and were embedded directly into the platform. So my job was to understand not just the underlying models, but the nuance of how those agents really showed up differently through this these product pillars. How did they interact with each other? How do we make sure that we introduce them into the customer journey at the right points to make life easy for them? So really being able to thread that one customer story, that Gong AI doesn't just like sit in a corner, but it moves with you throughout your entire revenue workflow. And I think one of the things that helped was also the fact that within Gong, I think I would say this for any launch that we were doing, it wasn't like just launch and forget. We spent a lot of time for our agents launch educating the market. Like I remember putting our co-founder on webinars, just like having them educate other revenue leaders to break down what are agents, what are assistants, how are they different? Like how is it that a leader can really understand the capabilities of what these different terms mean and implement them for their team. So I feel like all of that sort of helped bring the right story out in front of the people and being able to lead with, as I said, outcomes more than the features. I feel like right now everyone's like so much into naming of their AI features of like, hey, we need to add AI in front of all of our features to make sure that customers know that this is AI powered or like what it really means. But I think one of the things I would always ask my sales team about was like, hey, they asked about this AI feature, but like, what were they really trying to get to? Like, what was the challenge that we were hoping to solve for them? And when you really break it down in that sense, you do realize that a lot of your features probably cater to those pains, but it's just about being able to bring that value first before talking about how AI powered we are or what models really are underlying that help those features and things like that. And, you know, convincing your PMs and engineers is, I think, a separate conversation altogether. I feel like there's a lot of like trust building that works into that. And I think my story with all of the PMs that I worked with was always, you know, like I'm here to make sure that the products that you're building are used in the right sense for with the customers. Like I'm here to like make your products shine in front of customers, make sure they're using it and they understand correctly how to use it within their team. So if you can build that trust and bridge that gap, that sort of helps them trust you with the kind of messaging that you're bringing to the table. Or even if you want to take a unique take on how is it that you want to put this messaging in front of different customers. I really believe in involving my PMs into my messaging doc early on. So it doesn't come as a surprise as to like, hey, this is like a 6-page positioning doc I wrote. Why don't you review it? But really sort of making them a part of each value pillar that I'm working with, each challenge that we're facing, especially if you're doing alphas and beta feedbacks together with your PMs, it sort of helps break down that silos and makes them very much a part of that process of putting that messaging together.
That makes a lot of sense. And, you know, you mentioned, I think you had multiple roles, including release marketing and others while you were at Gong. Like, it sounds like you were pretty quote unquote full stack as a PMM there. What was that like? Like, did you also look at pricing? And you mentioned adoption. Like, how did you get adoption from your customers? Things like that. I'm curious. Yeah. What did that look like from day to day?
Yeah. I feel like full stack PMM is just like, it's like you're just scattered in terms of the number of things you have to do. Like one day you're sitting on like back-to-back win-loss calls and like digging into why we lost deals. And the next you'll be like briefing analysts about your product or like writing a press pitch. So, you know, I really feel like there's like constant context switching that happens for full stack PMM. And it's sort of unique in the sense that you don't just own messaging or launches. You're literally owning the messy process that comes into the middle of these things about like rallying all stakeholders together, like really diving into the research to understand which of our customers are going to be most affected by this feature, or like how does this position really speak to them in that sense. Before we even go out there and talk to customers, maybe we need to educate and enable our sales team to talk to customers in the right way. So that's where, you know, you stop being a marketing support, but more of like a strategic glue that holds the product, the market, and the customer together. I really feel like as a full stack PMM, you're responsible for messaging development, sales enablement, driving adoption. It's really about being able to have like laser focus on the kind of priorities that you're working on currently, and then catering to the right stakeholders in a way that speaks to those priorities to eventually see a product go out of the door.
Yeah. And I feel like it's never been a better time to be a full stack PMM, just given that we now have the power of AI kind of at our fingertips. Yeah. So yeah, I'd love to hear, you know, whether that was at Gong or other places, how are you using AI in your workflows? Actually, I think I saw your Substack or read your Substack last week. It's a great article about just like how some PMMs are getting left behind and like some frameworks for how we can do it better. So yeah, I would love to hear from you, like what you see the problem space as and how you are using AI in your workflows.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, you know, I feel very passionately about AI and how PMMs can really use it. And one of my hot takes to this is just like, you know, how PMMs need to like stop thinking about AI as a collection of individual use cases and really start building integrated workflows. And I feel like product marketing has such a unique advantage in this space because we already sit at the intersection of product, sales, customer success. We really at our spot can see the full picture of how AI is being used or underused across the organization, or where AI can come in and like sort of delete those repeatable processes that are happening that's taking away time from everyone's calendars. So you're already, as a PMM, translating between technical and business teams. You're already bridging between departments. And now you can use those same skills to create a culture of AI collaboration within your team. So being able to like use AI within your workflows is something that all of us are trying to scramble around with and figure out our best use cases. I'll give an example from my work. Something that I've been seeing a lot of impact with is how we have set up a workflow where every close lost deal in my CRM automatically flows into Asana. So, and I then use Asana's AI Studio to summarize the week's lost deals about like why we lost, what are the competitor mentions, what were the regional trends that really impacted that. And instead of a sales manager giving me an anecdotal feedback from top of his mind about like, hey, these are the reasons we lost these deals, or maybe me going through Gong calls of like transcripts and understanding what happened, I can really walk into leadership meetings now with a synthesized report on that shows exactly why we're losing and where we're losing, just so that we can improve on that. And I feel like that doesn't just help with productivity, but it's more of like an influence that you can have in the decision making of next steps too. So definitely a lot of AI use to delete the repeatable day-to-day tasks that we're doing. But I also feel like it's important to sort of audit where you're using AI in terms of like where your strategy needs to come in and where you just need the tool to go out there and do the work for you.
Yeah, I love this example. So like it's basically closed loss reporting, like a summary, exec summary that comes to you. So it's like if deal is marked closed lost in Salesforce, then pull this recording and summarize it and put it into Asana. Yeah. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes. Okay. Yes, that's exactly right.
I think PMM should like go do that now. I think it's a great use case. I have not set up something like that myself. We have like competitive intel insights that we share with the company, and you know, that's built off of Vertex AI. But like, yeah, this is a great use case that for some reason I'm not doing. So
no, it's actually really easy. And I feel like my take to this is also that, you know, And I think this is a not a sort of problem I have with AI tools also, where they just stop at giving you an insight. They just tell you what needs to be done. But what next? Like, tell me how I can take this insight ahead and use this data to like go ahead in my workflow or make my process easier. And, you know, a lot of tools don't intuitively tell you this, but you got to figure out how you can best synthesize that information, take that forward, share it with the right team members, just so that it helps you be more productive in the kind of things that you're doing.
Yeah. I think this is a great segue to something, you and I even discussed off camera, which is like, where do you find that balance and strike that balance between human judgment, and this is just something that, you know, AI can handle for me. I think it becomes kind of tricky. And the closed loss example is actually a good one. It's like, well, maybe I do need, you know, I actually need this to feed me the data and the summary so that I can take it into my next meeting. Like, it kind of depends. But yeah, I'm curious kind of how do you strike that balance?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, especially because I feel like, you know, as I said, I see a lot of PMMs today use AI for two things. One is your day-to-day, which is your repeatable high-volume tasks that you're using AI for. And B is the strategic side of things, where you're treating AI as an extension of the toolkit, of your PMM toolkit, which is really about like how AI can help you come in and gives you the right information, but eventually you're the one who takes that decision. I feel like a lot of advice you see around LinkedIn and tools like that is just about how AI is going to take over our jobs, or like, you know, just AI is doing so much for us. Like, where does the value of PMMs really come in? And my take to that really is about how the human elements that an individual brings to this process, about your nuanced thinking, your relationship building when it comes to partner marketing or things like that, or even your strategic thinking, just becomes so much more important at this point. Your personality is what makes you unique, and even more important, your LLMs are ranking content based on original thought or deep expertise. So there's no better time to be a human in this sea of AI-generated content. Your relationships are such a critical element that AI cannot replace. And we've seen that time and again in the kind of things that we go ahead and do within the work that we do, where PMMs are, you know, using AI for fixing generic outputs and like really getting into what the prompt needs to be to get me the right output for the information that I'm putting in. But AI really is powerful, but it's not magic. It cannot replace your judgment, your ability to weigh trade-offs, or your understanding of users. So that's where, you know, you need to exercise where you need to audit the use of AI and ask it to stop so that you can come in and bring in your judgment into this.
Yeah, I like that a lot. It's similar to really any automation you would run, right? It's like you have to decide when human intervention is needed. You mentioned prompts. So this is something also that's been on my mind, which is prompt engineering. So I was actually doing some research into just looking at, you know, the most basic models and their offerings, like Google Agent Space, Microsoft Copilot. And it was very interesting to me. Like, I saw this research done that showed that prompt engineering, it can very significantly, I guess it's pretty obvious, alter the costs of how much you're pulling from how much compute you're using from the models. So like, not only is it, you know, save literally tangible money, but also, of course, if you prompt it better, you get a much higher quality output. So not only are you saving on inputs, which I think is something most people don't talk about, but you're also generating a much higher output if you have the right prompts. However, I find that I'm still somewhere in the, I mean, I would say I've graduated from like the beginner, where you're just literally typing in, you know, whatever, how do I fix this or something, to like more structured prompts. But I often find that once I'm on like, I don't know, like prompt 5 or 6 in a thread, I'd also default to make this work or like please fix type of stuff. So I'm curious.
Do better.
Do better. Yeah, right. Exactly. Like, I was actually listening to this podcast this morning, and it was like, you know, we have to start thinking like managers of these AI agents or these AI tools. Yeah. And as a manager, that's a pretty bad response to somebody.
Feedback.
Yeah, exactly. This is bad. Do better. So
yeah.
I'm curious. Yeah. Like how you, it's a very long way of saying, like, I'm curious how you manage the prompt engineering. And once you get down this rabbit hole and, you know, if things don't improve, how do you continue to like optimize? And I guess part of it is just not being frustrated with the output.
No, this is so interesting, especially because I see so many people around me face this. And, you know, like most of us now are using like a paid version of ChatGPT or Claude. But like earlier when you weren't paying for it and you were just experimenting with it, there were only so many inputs you could give a chat before it like shut down for the next 24 hours for you. So you really got to be very precise in the kind of prompts that you're giving the tool. And I feel like the more that I've played around with these tools, the more I've understood like prompt engineering sounds very lofty and fancy and like inaccessible. But I think for PMMs, it's becomes really easy if you start treating that AI tool just as you would like try to understand a customer, where you're understanding the audience, the intent, and the outcome. And just like, you know, persuasive sales or like marketing prompt engineering, it's a direct extension of that. And like PMMs already have the skill set. If you can craft prompts that move an AI to action, you can craft messaging that moves people to action. It's as simple as that. So I feel like the psychological principles and practical frameworks are the same. It's really about understanding how the AI model functions. There are quite a few varying formats out there that people use for prompt engineering. There's like something called as prep, where you look at persona, role, example, and purpose, which is how you talk to the tool. But I think one of the elements that I like to use with to get effective prompts, which I've sort of learned through a lot of trial and error, is like probably like six elements into it. First is the task, which is where you give the AI tool, you define the action that you want the model to perform. Then is the context, which is you really flesh the task with more background information. And next is persona, which is very effective. You ask the tool to define the persona that leads to more effective outcomes. Like, for example, you're a seasoned copywriter. So like, tell me prompts according to that. And the next few are just about tone, examples, format, and iteration. I feel like all of this together sort of help you reduce the amount of A-B tests that you're doing with getting the right prompt across the road. And I feel like the first three elements of task, context, and persona sort of help in creating those personalized outcomes. They really set the foundation for generating on-point content that content that aligns with your goals. And the remaining elements are just to further refine the output, ensuring that there is consistency to what your desired result is. And I feel like doing this sort of like spending some time on crafting the right prompt helps me, or like saves me from the AI slop that a lot of these tools sometimes end up giving you, where you just get lost and like they're so verbose and they're so long that you're just like constantly scrolling and you're like, where is the real thing that I need from this information? So I really, you know, we both discussed this, how we're keeping the old school way of like keeping a prompt diary on your back end, just so that you know exactly the kind of prompt that worked for you. And you can always go back to that and copy paste that to get to the right result quicker. I don't think any prompt will give you the exact result you want in the first go. That's the beauty of it, right? Like if you copy paste that and use it in your work, everyone's going to know you're using AI and it's not going to create any impact. But it's more about like giving it feedback, training it. I love treating my AI tools as like, you know, a very smart intern that you have who you need to give feedback to. You need to tell that you need to speak more to my tone. This is a piece of content I wrote recently. Maybe you need to mimic the kind of writing that I do or learn about this person on LinkedIn and help me craft a personalized message depending on what their interests are and things like that. Something interesting that I've lately started doing is how taking a lot of advantage of ChatGPT projects where you can really feed in all the files needed to help reference to that and give you the right outputs back. And something that I've been doing is like spending an hour every Sunday evening updating those files, because that project is really pulling information from depending on what those project files are. But if your project files are stale and they don't have like the right information over time, it's not going to give you the right results back. So if you can spend some time updating those files or like working on how best to give it the right feedback, it will help you get to the results that you want pretty quick.
That's an interesting one. I remember I tried this out for like customer stories and I uploaded like some of our best ones. And then this was probably my own fault, but then every time I tried to like ask it anything, it would just always cite those as like the for everything. And I just got a little frustrated because I'm like, you know,
need to stop.
Yeah, exactly. Or you use that specifically as a customer story repository, right? So I think like, yeah, sometimes you actually have to narrow in, and if it's a project, decide that, hey, this project is going to be focused on a being or create a custom GPT for that kind of stuff. So interesting. So you shared this kind of, you know, the task context persona. I took notes of it. Of course, the acronym, there's no crazy acronym to this, but I am curious, what is the last one, iteration? Is that just like iterating or is setting that expectation with AI?
Yeah, I feel like with iteration, I think it comes as step two, where I don't think you can craft a prompt and just, as I said, leave it to give you the right result back. You can't expect perfection on the first try. You need to be able to refine your prompts based on the initial output. And, you know, with iteration, I feel like that's an important step, just in terms of knowing that this is not the kind of output that you can just go ahead and use in your daily workflow. You need to go back and even like give feedback to the project or the prompt, being like, hey, you did a good job here, and this is what the kind of language I want you to continue using. Or like, you used this word which sounds very AI, or you used an M dash again and have asked you not to use one. So, you know, giving that sort of feedback to iterate upon the kind of results that the prompt gives you sort of helps me going back on that project and reworking on some other file, because it will always remember that, you know, these iterations sort of play into the kind of inputs or the outputs you get later on also.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So we talked about the workflows, we talked about kind of the philosophy as well. But what are some of the tools you're using? The $1 million question. What tools are you experimenting with? What should PMMs be experimenting with?
Yeah, I have a little bit of a different take to this, especially because I feel like a lot of tools are out there. And I'm like out there shopping for tools at all times, just out of my curiosity to understand how do they work? How can they make my life easier? And I've like candidly like spent and wasted so much time like educating myself about these different tools, because you're figuring out how to prompt it or like how to really go about doing things like around it. And you spend a lot of time training that model, and sometimes it doesn't give you the exact result that you want back. So I feel like I have a baseline for anything to do with content or research or messaging positioning. I still just rely on ChatGPT and Claude, especially because I feel like they are the underlying models, and a lot of the other tools are just like wrappers built on top of these models. So when you work directly with ChatGPT or Claude, you have more flexibility and control over the outcomes. I'm like constantly training them, I'm giving them feedback as compared to any other tool that I would be using. So I sort of rely on them a lot for my writing. But apart from that, another tool that I've been loving is Gamma. I feel like everyone's been experimenting with it just to make presentations. But something interesting that I did was like, how I feel like if you've logged into Gamma, you've seen like it's a little complicated in terms of the kind of prompts that you need to give it. There are instructions, there are project files, things like that. So I feel like a lot of these AI tools, something I was discussing with a friend recently, was how their onboarding isn't the best. You don't really know how to work around it when you first log into these tools. There's a lot of hallucinations that happens, and it's like a blank slate syndrome, right? Like you open ChatGPT, but you don't know how to play around with it in the first go. So I sort of like went back to ChatGPT and asked my project about like, hey, I'm trying to make these slides on Gamma. This is all the content that I want on it. Can you draft a prompt for me that will give me the exact result I want? And that sort of like eliminated the need for me to work from scratch on a prompt entirely for a completely different tool, just because Chat really came up and gave me the right prompt I needed. And I just copy pasted that on Gamma and it sort of created the exact slide that I wanted that I could just send across to my sales team for quick check. So I feel like relying on the models is something I do a lot. But as I said, Gamma is something that really helps me. Granola is really great. It's also on your phone now. So it really helps in just being able to take notes and like send follow-up emails going back from that. Another interesting tool is Whisperflow, just to like get your writing way quicker, even if you're using like a mechanical keyboard. So that's again something that I've been using a lot. So I feel like these, I have a very tiny tech stack. I still explore with a lot more, but for recommendations, I would still stick to a very tiny tech stack.
I like it. Yeah, most wrappers basically just include their own system prompts. I think it's a pretty good stack. And you know, if you have like a workflow tool, maybe like, you know, N8N or something, then you know, pretty much most of the things you need. I also really like Gamma, actually. I like, sometimes I'll be designing like my slides or something, and hopefully, I think Google is actually pretty close to, they delivered an early version, which I don't think is like too great in terms of being able to update Google Slides. Who knows?
Yeah.
By the time this is released, like it'll be amazing. But
yeah, Gemini is doing great now. So with images and stuff. So why not?
Yeah, I want to see the slides improve. But, you know, I think we're getting closer and closer. But what I'll do is if I'm stuck on a slide, like I don't know what this should look like, I will just go plug it in Gamma. And the context window of, like you said, of your ChatGPT, since it has all of your history, all of that is much better. So like you said, it's much better to sometimes introduce the prompt there and say, hey, how should I prompt Gamma so I get the best result? So it's a really good point. Very cool. So maybe you covered this, but like as we enter this age of AI, era of AI, like as product marketers, what is kind of the, I don't know, one skill or something that we need to be focused on, like that's become more important that people, you know, need to realize?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, it's more than a hard skill. It's a soft skill that will really show up now. And one of the things that I've been reading a lot about is just having good taste and like really seeing how you can take the right output that AI gives and turn that into something that really sits well with customers. I feel like AI can generate outputs, but it has no palate. Taste is really the ability to know when a piece of messaging will feel sharp or when a demo story will actually land with the kind of customers that you have, or where even the copy feels a little off, like this sounds like a robot is talking to me. This is not how a human talks. So, you know, everyone has access to the same models, but what separates one DMM from another is whether you can curate, edit and elevate that copy in terms of having good taste in knowing what your user wants or what is it that will really stick with the market currently with how things are shaping. And I feel like being able to exercise that skill for every AI output you get will become very, very important, because what you eventually put out there for customers, they are the ones who are going to decide if this really resonates with them or not. And everyone, as I said, has access to the same tools and they're training on like similar data. So how do you stand out from the crowd? And that's where, you know, your, as I said, your human judgment and your taste is something that works.
I like that. Yeah, absolutely. Well, this has been a great conversation, Maitri. There's a few questions I always ask our guests when, as we close. One of them is, product marketing is blank. Can you fill in the blank?
Yeah, I thought about this a little, and I feel like my answer to this is just like, product marketing is bringing the right perspective to the table. I feel like PMM in your role, you can really zoom out and connect the dots of like product is building features, sales is chasing quota, marketing is running campaigns, but we're the ones spotting patterns in this sea of scattered data points. So we really have the ability to bring perspective into this whole gamut of things and turn that into a cohesive story that actually resonates with the field and the customers. So without perspective, the risk is that everyone optimizes locally and misses the bigger picture of things. And we should really come in and align that with business goals, the real problems of customers. Why does it matter? Why now? So that perspective is really important for product marketing.
I love it. That's a good one. I think that's a new one as well. So it's a great way to sum up even just our conversation today. Maitri, how can people learn more about you and your journey and everything you've, the cool Substack, all the things? Where can people learn more about what you're doing, what you're thinking about?
Of course. Yeah. Like hit me up on LinkedIn anytime. I'm available for a quick coffee chat. Always happy to talk about new AI tools or what's happening within the industry. I also have a Substack called Thrive Theory where I write my thoughts down. So that's a good place to hear about what I'm thinking. But yeah, very accessible for anyone wanting to learn more about product marketing or AI.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Great. Thank you so much. This was so lovely. I'm glad we got some time to speak about all of these things that are on top of mind for everyone.
Exactly.
For everyone still tuned in, thanks so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please help us spread the word to other product marketers. Thanks again and have a great morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are.